is this our 50th episode? Yeah! This is our 50th episode. Oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh, milestone. Okay, and then is Indra Patra Gardo versus
always. Always Gardo versus Osa.
Always. Again, back to epic heroes and being horrible husbands. So they have self-driving boats, AI.
AI Chris. Remote viewing trees. Get back.
Yeah.
Well, maganda naman is so high tech.
They're so advanced. Oh, where's the real king of Manila?
I know, I know. It's like the Jesus cup. What is it called? You know what? The Holy Grail.
The welcome to the Gods Must Be Crazy podcast.
I'm Anima.
And I'm Ice.
The Gods Must Be Crazy podcast is a podcast on Filipino mythology and folklore.
And today we are going to revisit one of my favorite topics that I always go to, which is one of the epics. We've covered the Lam'ang epic.
Yes.
In Luzon. We've covered the Humadapnon, Hinilawad epics of Visayas. So I thought today, let's do a Mindanao epic.
Okay.
Are you familiar with any Mindanao epics?
No, none.
Have you heard of Indra Patra?
The Hindu? That's familiar. I think I have.
So Indra Patra and Sulaiman is one of the most well-known epics of the Maranao people.
Oh,
of the Maguindanao region.
Nice.
And I think the epic itself is interesting. There are multiple versions of it, but what I found even more interesting when I started looking into it is just because we haven't had the chance to really cover a lot of the Mindanao mythologies, right? I mean, we did the Bagobo with Mebuyan, but we didn't get to cover a lot of, like, you know, related history, especially with regard to, like, the Islamic influence, moral influence, and stuff like that. So there's a bit more of that in this episode, which I found interesting. And I had to stop myself because I was kind of going into, like, a crazy history rabbit hole. And I reached the point where I was like, actually, Anima doesn't need to know this. This has absolutely nothing to do.
It's your backstory.
With Indra Patra and Sulaiman anymore.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But we will cover a little bit of the history of the Maguindanao people and the Maguindanao people. Just so you know who they are.
Great.
Because they were basically one of the biggest sultanates in Mindanao. And that's where the name Mindanao comes from. So the Maguindanao Sultanate, and I will show you a picture and we will post it if we remember. But at its height, the Maguindanao Sultanate covered the entire southern coastline of the Philippines.
Wow.
And its center or its capital really was around the Lake Lanao, where the name Maranao comes from. Right? So,
is it Lake Lanao or Lake Lanao?
I don't know. Maybe Lanao. Yeah, maybe. You're right. And the Maguindanao provinces are here, right below where the lake is. So that's the kind of the extent of, like, you know, at the height of the Maguindanao Sultanate.
Were there other countries that were part of it? Or just in the Mindanao Islands?
No, it was in the Mindanao Islands. Okay. They were converted by
the Islam influence.
So according to the royal records of the Maguindanao, a man called Sharif Muhammad Kabungsuan of Johor.
Johor, which is shout out Johor,
which is modern name Malaysia, introduced Islam to the Maguindanao at the end of the 15th century. So not that long ago, actually. Pretty much
right long before the Spanish came. Yeah.
And you know, I think this is even more interesting when you consider the fact that, you know, Mindanao was one of the strongest, had one of the strongest resistance to Spanish rule. In fact, they pretty much held their own for the longest time and one of their most well-known Sultan Kudarat, put up like a really, really strong resistance against the Spanish. So anyway, so the name of Mindanao, they say, is basically, you know, the Spanish kind of truncating
of Maguindanao.
The name Maguindanao, which means people of the floodplains. Ooh. And that becomes interesting when you listen to the epic later.
Yes, yes.
So, because the word magiinged, I think, means people or citizen, and the now is the lake or the marsh. So, they're people of the floodplains.
Yeah. I like this story a lot.
Yeah, it's... I actually find this so incredibly fascinating. The capital of the Maguindanao Sultanate was called Cotabato.
Cotabato? Sounds like Uluwatu.
But it also sounds like Cotabato because that's what it is today. Cotabato. Cotabato is what it was called. And they had like, you know, rich trade with like Dutch people and Chinese people. And eventually Spanish, actually. They traded with the Spanish. So the Maguindanao people are, you know, comprised of that group. Right now, the Maguindanaoans constitute the 9th largest Filipino ethnic group today. And they're very renowned for, like, their art, you know, their boats. Like, there's a very distinctive kind of...
Are Vintas from Maguindanao?
You know, I'm going to have to confirm.
I'm going to look it up.
But they're also known for being really good metal workers. So the wavy blade kris is one of the things that is most strongly attributed to Maguindanao culture. Right? As well as their ceremonial gongs.
Oh. I know it's they're made by the Sama Bajau.
The Bajau.
And Yakan peoples in the Sulu Archipelago in the south of Mindanao.
Okay. So, there was a legend. Because I think one of the interesting things is even when they eventually got converted to Islam, a lot of like non-Islamic, you know,
beliefs
or pre-Islamic beliefs were preserved, right? And stayed. And we have records of that, the Bagobo, the Manobo, and all of that. There is kind of an explanation in one of their legends, which is treated as part of their history.
Okay.
So I wasn't able to fully check whether these were like actual historical people, like recorded on paper, but there's a legend that says that before the arrivals of the first Muslim missionaries, the ancestors of the Maguindanaoan and Teduray people lived as one in the Cotabato lowlands, right, in the plains. And among them were two brothers called Mamalu and Tabunaway. And when the first missionary came to preach Islam, only the younger brother, Tabunaway, converted to Islam. Meanwhile, the older brother, Mamalu, said, "No, I still believe in our, you know, animistic, the old gods and stuff like that." And they were perfectly fine with that.
Yeah.
Right? So, in fact, what they did was, okay, so your people, Tabunaway, will convert to Islamic religion, and then the people who want to, you know, retain their animistic beliefs will stay with Mamalu. And they formed a pact. So, Mamalu would settle in the mountains, in the highlands. And remember, this is where they retained a lot of the animistic beliefs. And Tabunaway would remain in the lowlands along with Pulangi and their respected followers. So over time, the lowland Muslims led by Tabunaway became the Maguindanaos.
Okay.
And then the highland animists became the Teduray. And they said that the brothers maintained their relationship despite living separately. And they did this by sending each other goods using a magical boat that could drive itself crossing the river by command of the brothers. A self-driving boat.
By Elon Musk.
By Mamalu and Tabunaway. So anyway, so that's just like an overview.
That's nice. I like that.
I know, of the Maguindanao people.
Yeah.
Now, the story I'm going to tell you is basically the story of two brothers, Indarapatra and Sulaiman. And the interesting thing...
Indarapatra sounds Hindu and Sulaiman is Solomon. So
Well, a lot of people have said that the stories bear a lot of like elements or similarities from the Ramayana, right? And even the motif of like two brothers fighting,
yes,
defeating monsters, etc., yeah, which is what the main plot line basically, mm, is very common.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Actually, across the world.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
even like European mythologies, yeah, would have that kind of epic and stuff like that. And yes, Indrapatra is a Hindu,
yeah,
or Sanskrit word.
Yeah.
Even Sulaiman.
Yeah, yeah.
Correct. Okay. So this is the mythology.
Okay.
Right? So,
Once upon a time.
So, long ago, before the days of Kabungsuan,
mm-hmm,
right? And Kabungsuan is the one who converted.
Yes, yes. You
know, that guy, right? So, before the days of Kabungsuan, Maguindanao was covered by water and sea, extended over all the lowlands,
mm-hmm,
and nothing could be seen but mountains.
Ooh.
So, imagine the Lanao Lake today,
mm,
and there are mountains along, like,
yes,
the,
yes,
encircling it, right? So basically the point here was, before, you could not even see the lowlands.
Wow.
All you saw were mountain peaks.
Ooh.
And the people lived on the highlands on both sides, and there were so many of them, you know, they were very prosperous, and you know, settlements rose everywhere. But one day there appeared in the land pernicious monsters that started devouring every human that they could reach.
Chomp.
And they started settling in different mountains.
The monsters?
Own them themselves.
Oh my goodness.
So the first one was called the Kurita.
Mm-hmm.
And it had basically, it was a many-limbed monster. And it lived, it could live...
Like Pugita.
Yeah. It could live partly on the land and partly on the sea. And it haunted, so it claimed Mount Kabalalan, and it basically ate all animal life in its vicinity. The second was called Tarabusao.
Mm-hmm. That's
and,
familiar.
Yeah, it basically said that it was basically just an ugly creature that took a form of a man but was gigantic.
And, giant.
Yeah,
an ugly.
And it
giant.
Said it was extremely voracious. So it kept eating everything in its path. And so people fled from it. And it haunted Mount Matutun,
mm-hmm,
and its neighborhood. The third was a monstrous bird called the Pah.
Pah.
P-A-H.
Okay.
This bird was so large when on the wing that it covered the sun.
Like a thunderbird.
And then it would produce darkness underneath when the sun, when its wingspan would cover the sun. And people said that... its claws were like razor blades. It kind of giving Minokawa,
mm-hmm,
when I heard it.
Wait, I was on sidebar. I was on Amazon,
uh-huh,
looking for like presents to get people. And one of the things I wanted to get Yaya was gloves, gardening gloves. But the
it sounds so dangerous.
These fingers were claws.
Oh my God.
And so they were purple, so she could like dig. Anyways.
Sounds fun. Okay, so the Pa, its egg was as large as a house.
What?
And it haunted, yeah. And it
so it's a lady.
Huh?
A lady monster.
Yeah, I guess. And it haunted Mount Bita in the eastern Ranao region. So mm-hmm. This is where they're starting to divide, like, the area, right? And the people were so scared of all of these monsters that they hid themselves in the caves in the mountains. So they didn't, like, they fled all of their settlements,
mm-hmm,
right? And the fourth was a dreadful bird, which had 7 heads,
mm-hmm,
but it doesn't say what the name was, right? And it basically lived in Mount Gurain,
mm-hmm,
and the adjacent area,
mm-hmm,
that was beside it. So when that happened, basically, it was almost like the area of the now, that mm-hmm. area was...
It, monster land.
It felt completely abandoned.
Oh!
Because... everyone fled, right?
Yeah,
they all
yeah.
hid and stuff like that. And it's just the monsters were living in the only land that was surfaced
yeah.
from the water. So when the news reached Raja Indrapatra,
mm-hmm.
who was the king of Mantapuli,
mm-hmm.
which was beside or near Maguindanao, he felt sorry for the people of Maguindanao. So he called his brother Raja Sulaiman
mm-hmm.
or Solomon, actually. Mm-hmm. And
is he the same Raja Sulaiman from Manila?
No, but we'll cover him.
Okay.
So,
there's a square in Manila, Raja Sulaiman Square.
Yeah. So, So Raha Indra Patra called his brother, younger brother Raha Sulaiman, and asked him, like, hey, can you help? Because he wanted to do something, and they consulted with the gods. And the gods said, why don't you send your younger brother first?
Okay.
And see, like, if he can fare and beat all the monsters. Mm-hmm. So basically, don't go with the both of you. Like, send your younger brother first. Because according to the legends, they're both strong warriors.
Mm-hmm.
But Raha Indrapatra was the older and the wiser.
Okay.
Of the two brothers. But he said, no, you're very strong. You should go and kind of fight the monsters.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So Raha Sulaiman, you know, felt a lot of sympathy for the people of Mindanao. And he felt like, you know, he was excited to prove himself as well. And,
but he's already a king.
Huh?
He was already a king.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Because the way that the sultanate worked is, it's not like you're directly ruling every single province, right? You would have like sub kingdoms under you, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
and like we were talking about earlier on, it's not the Western concept of like consolidation.
Mm.
Like people just had their own neighbor. I'm sure there was some kind of consolidation, but like they didn't have a concept of like, okay, now all of Mindanao is ours.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So basically, so Raha Sulaiman agreed, right? And then his brother handed him his ring.
His ring?
Yeah, his ring. This becomes important later. And his kris,
mm-hmm.
called the Jurupakal.
Jurupakal.
I guess pakal is bakal.
Maybe.
Jurupakal. Like bakal, metal.
Yeah.
Yeah. And wished him safety and success. But before he left, they planted a sapling on the ground in front of his widow. So window. So Indrapatra planted a small, like little sapling on the ground. And he said to Sulaiman, this is going to represent you. So if this tree lives, I know that you're still alive. But if this tree dies, then I will know that you have died.
Oh, I'm looking at Jurupakal and it says it's a sentient kris.
Yeah.
It's a smart kris.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So they have self-driving boats.
Self-driving boats.
And they have...
sentient krises.
AI
krises. But also they have remote viewing trees.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
Satellite trees.
No, it's like an aura ring. It like it connects to the sapling.
Yes, yes.
The
yes.
ring is an aura ring.
Ah! It connects.
Gulo anyway. Okay. So Raha Sulaiman left Mantapuli.
Okay.
And he wanted to travel to Mindanao. He didn't walk, he didn't use a boat. He rode the wind. To Mindanao.
You had no jetpack.
Yeah.
Well, Mindanao is so high tech.
Honestly, they're so advanced. So, the first place he reached was Kabalalan.
Mm-hmm.
And he stood...
Is that the first mountain with the first monster?
Yes.
Like
it's Mount Kabalalan where the Kurita
is. So it's like a... In my head...
You know, I think I have a picture. Let me try to see.
Kurita, I'm trying to think of it as like a pugita, which is like a octopus. Kurita. Monster.
This one.
Oh my goodness.
Many limbs.
It's a chubby one.
Yeah. Okay. So, the Kurita.
He kind of looks like a froggy face.
So, he landed on Mount Kabalalan. And he looked around. So, he was at the summit of the mountain. He looked around. He looked at the land. He looked at the villages. He could not see a single...
Person.
Human being.
Oh no.
And he was like, oh my god, this is so bad. So he felt so much pity for the land. And as he spoke, the whole mountain moved.
The mountain was a monster.
And suddenly, no, he was under the ground. Oh. So suddenly, out from the ground, a dreadful animal came out and it attacked Sulaiman and fixed its claws in his flesh. And Sulaiman saw it and he knew it was the Kurita.
Who would we cast as Raha Sulaiman? Is he handsome? Or he's just like, he's just a younger brother.
So, if he's younger, he's not
handsome. I'm thinking he's the younger actor.
Mikael Daes.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Can. Okay, I have that image now. We'd have to get a picture of him, like, topless first.
My battery.
Is he really? Yeah.
He's their Ateneo batchmate.
Yeah. Oh my god. He's Moreno. Yeah, okay. I'm game for that. He's got a good jawline. Okay, okay.
And then is Indra Patra Gardo versus
Always. Always Gardo versus Osa.
Always. Wait, no. Then it should be... God, who's that guy?
Well, Piolo.
Hi.
Piolo.
I'm not very passionate about Piolo Pascual.
He's too old for you kasi.
Di naman.
He's older than me pa.
How old is Piolo
now? I have no idea. I'm making it up.
Yeah, okay, fine. Piolo's
okay.
Fine.
Yeah, okay. Okay,
sure, sure, sure.
Okay.
Gardo Versosa got unseated. No, Gardo Versosa can be
the dad.
The Raja Suleiman of Manila. Okay, so we'll talk about it.
Okay. Better.
Let's move on.
Okay. I just need a visual kasi. Okay.
So, the Jorita rose from the ground, attacked Suleiman, and fixed his claws in his flesh. And when Suleiman saw it, he knew it was the evil scourge of the land, and he drew his sword and he cut the Jorita into pieces.
Siri?
No, that's not the name. The name is Jurupaka.
Juru?
So, once he finished there...
Oh, I have an idea. Wait, let's pause. I know who Indra Patra should be. He should be a real prince.
Filipino?
No, Bruneian. Brunei prince. But he's hot, so you'll be okay with it. He's so hot. He's just getting married. Like, look at this.
Show me.
That's his arm.
Okay, but who is he? Where's his face?
He's the prince of Brunei. He's the youngest son of the sultan.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay.
And he's a real prince. And Brunei, I think he is looks part more... of the kingdom. Yeah. So, yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Prince Mateen.
Are you ready?
I'm ready. I was unsettled. Okay.
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 So from there, Suleiman then traveled to the next mountain, Matutun. And there he saw even greater devastation, so complete wreckage. And as he stood on the mountain, he heard the noise in the forest, and he saw a movement in the trees.
Ugly giant.
And suddenly the Tarabusaw appeared.
Rawr.
And it actually, it drew near and gave a loud yell.
I was really just trying to cover up my burp.
So basically it cautioned Suleiman and he threatened him that I'm gonna kill you, I'm gonna eat you.
Arr.
Right? And Suleiman in turn threatened to kill the Tarabusaw. And the animal said to Suleiman, "If you kill me, I shall die the death of a martyr."
And what does that mean?
And as it said these words, it broke large branches from the trees. And used it to attack Suleiman.
Ernesto.
And their fight lasted for a long time.
7 years.
Until at last the animal was exhausted and it fell to the ground. And when it fell to the ground, Suleiman struck it with the sword and killed it. And the animal, when it was dying, it looked up at Suleiman and it actually congratulated him.
Oh!
Like, you have defeated me, and you have bested me and stuff like that. And Suleiman said,
"He's a good sportsman."
Suleiman said, "No, you shouldn't congratulate me. You should recognize that you've brought your death upon yourself.
It's true.
I am not the cause of your death. You are."
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I wonder what was the moral lesson behind this specific dialogue. It seems very poignant.
I wonder if it's to do with anti-colonizer sentiment, right? Of like, oh, I won. Like, he won because he was righteous. That's what he's saying, essentially. It's like, you're in the wrong and that's why you lost. It's not because I'm a better fighter or you're fighter. It's like, I'm righteous because you're the one who colonized this mountain.
That's true. So, he conquered two mountains, right? Now, he went to the third mountain. It was called Mount Bita.
Mm-hmm.
And there, the devastation was even worse than the first two places.
This is the Pa Island.
Yes.
Okay.
So, Suleiman walked through the village. He passed through the houses. He was trying to look to see if there are any survivors. But they were all completely empty and there was no one there. And suddenly, as he was walking, it became completely dark.
Ka-ha!
And he looked up to the sky and he saw this huge bird. and it was flying straight down at
him. Caw-caw!
That sounds too gentle for what's happening.
I can't do the sound effect.
So he saw, he recognized, oh my god, this is the bird monster that I'm supposed to defeat. So he drew his sword and he struck the bird and cut off its wing.
Oh no!
The bird died. He cut off the wing. The bird fell dead. But remember, the wing is so big, mm-hmm. right? It fell, the wing that he cut off fell on Sulaiman.
Oh no, it's...
And killed him.
Oh no, wait, he didn't finish all the missions.
So at this time, Indrapatra was sitting on his window mm-hmm. and he was just watching it every single day.
He's looking at the plant.
And the tree was growing and he's like, oh, I guess that means that Sulaiman's okay. Yeah. He's like, you know, going on his journey and all of that. And remember, some of the fights took years, right? Mm-hmm. So he was just like watching the tree growing.
Man, it was hard before cell phones.
I know. But then one day, he looked outside his window and he saw that the tree was withering up. So the leaves were starting to droop.
Mm-hmm.
And then the leaves dried up.
Oh no.
And he said, oh no.
Sulaiman, my brother.
So Raja Sulaiman is dead, right? So this obviously broke his heart and he said, okay, I have to like get revenge or have to finish his mission for him. So he got up, he put on his sword mm-hmm. and his belt
mm-hmm.
and he flew again on the wind to Mindanao to
on search his for jetpack. His,
yeah, to search for his brother. So he landed on the first mountain, Kabalalan, mm-hmm. and when he looked around, he saw the bones of the Horita. And then he said, okay. So Sulaiman was already here and he defeated the monster. He won. So it's okay. So he left. And then he flew to Matutun. And he saw the bones of the Tarabusao.
Mm-hmm.
And again, Sulaiman was not there. So he concluded, okay. So he finished on this mountain. He's okay. Mm-hmm. Then he passed on to Mount Bita, the third mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And he resumed the search. And there, he saw the dead bird.
Uh-huh.
Lying on the ground. And he saw that the wing was like severed from his body.
Mm-hmm.
So he was about to move on. But then he realized that there was something under the wing.
Oh, no.
So he lifted the wing and he saw the bones of his brother.
Oh no, that was Sulaiman. Such a long time.
And he recognized that it was his brother because he saw
the ring and the sword.
The kris.
Uh-huh.
Lying by the side. And he realized that it was his brother. And so he was overwhelmed with grief and he started crying. So Piolo started crying.
Mm-hmm.
And then he raised his head, and when he looked around, suddenly there was a small jar of water behind him. And he was like, this wasn't here before. And I think this is sent to me from the gods.
Okay.
So he took the jar, and he poured the water on the bones. And Sulaiman came back to life.
Resurrection!
Because it's that easy.
Yay! They may not have cell phones, but they have resurrection water.
So Sulaiman stood up.
Yay!
And then he greeted, he was reunited with Indrapatra. You know, and they were very happy. And it, from Sulaiman's point of view, it was like no time had left. It just like he fell asleep. Because mm-hmm. Indrapatra was like, oh my god, you died. Do you know that you died? And Sulaiman was like, No, I was just sleeping. I was completely fine. So after that, Sulaiman returned to Mantapuli. But Indrapatra said, no, I have to move on to the next mountain. Finish the fight.
What was the last monster again?
So it didn't have a name.
Oh, yeah. It's a seven-headed.
It's the seven-headed bird. And this is the epic image of that fight. Nice. So he used his Jurupakal
mm-hmm.
to kill the seven-headed monster.
Ooh.
Pretty cool.
I like that sword.
I know. And it is sentient.
And the shield shape is also very cool. Looks like a surfboard.
I know. So surfboard. he used his sword, the Jurupakal, and he defeated the bird with the seven heads. Now, having defeated all of the animals and restored peace to the land, Indrapatra said, okay, now I have to make sure that the land gets populated again.
Mm-hmm.
So he was like, I have to look for the people. Where are the people?
Where did they hide?
Who live on this land?
He goes, tutururu.
And this reminds me so much of when we talked about the Manobo myths. Because remember, they were like suffering from the heat.
Yes.
So they started to hide under the earth.
Yeah.
So anyway, in the Rapatra thought, okay, they're probably hiding somewhere in the earth as well. And they may still be alive. So he went around searching and he's walking around. And one day, while he was going around, he saw a beautiful woman.
Of course.
Of course he does. But when he ran to follow where she was, she suddenly disappeared.
Of course.
Through a hole in the ground where she was standing.
Floop.
In my mind, I was like, so like a manhole? Like she literally just like jumped
maybe like
in.
Gucci tunnels. Have you been to the Gucci tunnels?
Yeah. They're really scary.
Yeah. And made me realize how skinny people were during wartime Vietnam.
I know. I didn't have confidence to go.
Oh, diba? No, totally not.
There's this like sample tunnel.
Gloria went in. Not us.
Not the tunnel, but there's
the
cubby
hole. Where people, yeah, would come in.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And I think Jen, our friend Jen, she did. And they were asking me if I wanted to go. I'm like, I don't have confidence that I'm going to be able to get out of there.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Shout out to Jen. They listen during road trips.
Hi, Jen and Jono.
Hi, Jen and Jono. And Ella and the other boy, Connor. She disappeared in a hole.
Okay. She disappeared in a hole in the ground. And so Indrapatra wanted to follow, but he was tired. So he decided to take a rest first. And he was kind of hungry. So he's like looking down and looking around and seeing where he can find some food. And the thing is, he saw a pot full of uncooked rice and a big fire on the ground in front of him. Oh. And so he went to the fire and he placed it between his legs and put the pot over his knees to cook the rice.
He made his legs like an oven.
He made himself a stove. Oven.
Okay.
And I was like, what?
Okay. Okay. Couldn't have found like two twigs.
So yeah. So he was like, oh, then I don't know why he didn't think he could just use stone. So he used his feet.
This is classic boys. Boys
he
who
put
were like
his legs
one time
around the fire. He put the pot on top of his knees and he was cooking rice. And then suddenly he heard like someone like on the side making a comment. He heard someone laugh.
Of course.
And then he's like, wow, what a strong person.
Was it sarcastic? Like, wow.
In the story, it was sincere. But my interpretation, it was like, wow. Wow, ikaw na.
Wow. Or like that sarcastic, like when a guy does something so stupid and the girlfriend goes, wow.
He's like, oh, what a powerful person.
Wow, and then what a powerful person.
He turned around and there was an old woman nearby who was looking at him and wondering, how could he cook rice on a fire between his legs? And then...
he's got asbestos pants.
So the old lady went and talked to him while he was eating his rice. And so he asked her, like, where do you live? Like, where are your people staying? Where did you go? And then she said that most of them had been killed and eaten by the monsters, right? And the animals that had invaded the land. But there were few who were still alive. So she and her old husband, she said, they hid in a hollow tree and they could not come out from their hiding place until Raja Sulaiman killed Pa, the bird. And so the rest of the people and the Datu, she said, continued to hide in the cave in the ground and were too scared to come out again. So he said, oh, bring me to the cave and show me to the people. And so she did. So it was a very large cave. And on one side of it were the apartments of the Datu and his family.
How handy.
And so he was brought to the presence of the Datu and was quickly surrounded by the people of the cave. And then he told them.
Yeah,
like, so
all the monsters are dead.
Typical epic structure. He repeated the whole, like,
yes.
Oh, my brother went to blah, blah, blah.
Or he could have said, like,
blah, blah, blah.
Since we're in the future, here are my friends. They recorded a podcast and they'll tell you. You can listen to it in 30 minutes. I'm going to take a nap.
Yeah. Actually, my Chris is also a speaker.
It's a Bluetooth speaker. You know? Take a nap.
Okay.
Well, and cooks. How high tech he is, and he still cooks rice between his legs.
Yeah. It's just how it is.
voice.
So he told them, look, we defeated all the monsters, so now you can come out and you can actually re-inhabit the land again. And while he was saying that, he saw the beautiful girl.
Of course he did.
at the opening of the cave. And of course, she's the daughter of the Datu.
Of course.
And so the Datu, in appreciation,
gave his sons of his daughter.
Of Itirapatra's efforts, gave her to him in marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And the people came out of the cave and they returned to their homes. And at the time, the sea had started to withdraw. And
then the lowlands, it's like reverse global warming.
Yeah, it's like reverse Great Flood.
Yeah.
Right? Isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's not done yet.
Okay.
So the second part, so that's Act 1.
Okay.
Right. Now the Act 2, the As second part.
As epics go.
The second part of the epic was, so after getting married, again, these heroes don't care about their wives, I swear to God. So after getting married, Raja Indrapatra was like, oh, I should go back home.
Yeah.
To Mantapuri.
Yeah.
Right? But as he was considering his return home, he remembered that Sulaiman lost his ring.
Oh, his aura ring.
He only saw the sword, but he actually didn't see any trace of the ring. So he said, I have to look for Sulaiman's ring.
Okay.
My aura ring. So when he went out and started looking for it. And during his search, he found a net near the water.
Uh-huh.
And so he stopped to fish so that he could, like, you know, keep stock, although you travel with fresh fish. But anyway, fine. So he stopped to fish to replenish his provisions.
Mm-hmm.
And so he caught like a lot of buganga fish,
okay,
which he ate. And inside one of the fish was the ring. In some versions of the story, actually, he never found the ring again.
Okay.
In some versions of the story, someone said that it got lost inside the lake of Lanao.
Okay.
And that's why to this day, in like, I think at dawn or something, there'd be like a ring of clouds, like a misty ring around the lake. And that symbolizes the fact that Sulaiman's ring
That's so cool.
Is still in the lake.
Cool.
But in this version, it's in the fish.
In the fish.
at the end of this part, he was so happy. He's like, oh my God, I found it. I can return it now to my brother. So he left. And he said goodbye to his father-in-law and his wife.
He left her there in the cave?
He left her there.
Why didn't
not
he
not in the cave.
But like in her kingdom?
Yeah.
Why didn't he bring his wife?
There's another part. Let's cover that later. But tell me the story.
So in Dungeons and Dragons.
Yes, I watched it.
My favorite part of the movie was there was a giant fish. And they were clearly trying to pull something out of the fish. And you're like, well, I wonder what it is. And then they pull out a dog. I was like, what is going on? And it was just like they were just walking by. And it just happened. And that is the randomness of Dungeons and Dragons, the film that I really
enjoyed. That's really one of those, like, where you know that in the game, one of the players just insisted on, like, pursuing this random thing.
Yes.
So the game master's like, okay, sure, you found something.
You found something. You found a dog. You found your dog that was stuck inside a giant fish. Okay, fine. Okay, anyways, Act 2.
Again, back to epic heroes and being horrible husbands.
Yes.
So he's like,
great monsters, I great found as the brothers.
Ring. I have to return it to my brother. I'm going to go home. Bye, wife. So
the wife doesn't even have a name.
The wife who is pregnant. So Indrapatra's wife was pregnant at the time of their parting. Mm-hmm. And a few months later gave birth to twins.
Okay.
A boy and a girl.
Mm-hmm.
The boy's name was Rinamuntao.
Mm-hmm.
And the girl's name was Rinayun.
Mm-hmm.
And these people are supposed to be the ancestors of the Ranao tribes and their Datus. So that's where they trace their lineage.
Okay. That they are the descended from Indrapatra.
Mm-hmm. And that's it. That's the story.
The end.
So we don't know. Did Indrapatra ever come back for his wife?
I don't know.
We don't know. So as far as we know, she just went back to Mantapuli.
Uh-huh.
And she just gave birth to the descendants of the Ranao people.
This chill? Like, did he get home and just recover from his bird smushing?
So, the epic itself no longer speaks of Sulaiman. That's the last we hear.
There's no more mention of Sulaiman.
Yeah.
He chilled out. He did. He killed three monsters.
He was like, you know what, guys? I'm retiring.
Let's don't even have to talk about that
anymore. I'm not about this adventuring life.
It's like
anymore.
I'm quitting Facebook and I'm quitting Instagram. and was never heard from again. Yeah.
Although I've semi-quit Instagram.
Semi-quit. I'm still a lurker.
I only
have a Finsta.
I only log on to post on the Cosmos, you guys.
Yes.
Instagram, you guys. I do it for you.
Yes.
What was I saying?
How has it helped your mental health? Is it like...
Very good.
Very much, right?
Like, So first off, the doom scrolling. Like, I don't feel like I'm missing out.
Yeah, totally.
On the world. Because before, I used to be like... Obviously, you do it idly, like, when you're just not doing anything. But I used to... I remember my first few days without it. I was at, like, at the music festival.
Yeah.
And I had this weird compulsion, like... I need to, like, record this or post it. Afterwards, I was just, like, chilling and, like, no, this is, it's just happening. It's fine. It's okay. Yeah.
I do it now. Like, I...
And I don't feel FOMO.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Yeah. Like, oh, people are doing things. I decided at some point that I will only check social media when I have, like, the bandwidth to do it, like, the mental health to do it. And so I treat it like the news in the olden days. Like at 6 o'clock, you'll watch the news.
Mm.
So I'll just do it like at the end of my work day. Mm. I'll just read some news, and then I have a timer on 15 minutes. It's done. Tapos lang TV patrol.
Shane is my main like window to the outside
world. Yeah, Brian too. Also memes, because like Brian is also hip to all the animal memes that I love.
Yeah.
Of like animals doing ridiculous things, like a pelican trying to eat a baby capybara. He was like, "Did you see that video?"
Yeah.
And so that's how I know about things in life.
Shane just sends me like puppy and cat videos. Sorry. So just to like wrap up this part of the epic.
Okay.
Right? So like I said, Kabalalan, Matutong Bita, and Gurayn are the most prominent and picturesque peaks of the Mindanao province, right? And the whole narration, what's this? Is the narration was secured from Datu Kali Adam, who learned it from the late Maharaja Laila of the Maguindanao, and from Alad, one of the oldest and most intelligent Moros living.
I'm looking at Lake Nano pictures.
And Alad said that Mantapuli was a very great city, far in the land of the sunset. And they don't know where it is, but they're sure that it's beyond the sea. So it's like a mystical, it's like a Biringan almost.
So like, it's not in Maguindanao?
No. And he said that Mantapuli is so large and his people were so numerous that it blurred the eyes to look at them move.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is it China? India?
I don't know.
Because it's the land of the sunset, so it would have been west.
Maybe.
Right?
Yeah, that's true.
What's west? Borneo.
Yeah, that's true. So the animal Corita is said to bear some resemblance to the big crocodiles that are abound in the Rio Grande River.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And the Tarabusao could be a large variety of ape.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And
there are orangutans in Borneo.
That's true. So a heinous bird is still worshipped and is greatly feared by the Tirurais and the Manobos who live in the mountains south of Cotabato. The hateful Balbal, in which all the Moros believe, is described as a night bird, and its call is supposed to be familiar and distinctly audible every night.
So
that's what they say are kind of like the
roots.
Yeah, the origins on the natural world of these monsters that they speak of. I found it interesting because I remember when I was looking at the legend of the Sari Manok in the Rapatra. There was a version of Indira Patra's story that had to do with the Sari Manok. So in that version of the story, there was a prince called Raja Indira Patra. And he fell in love with the moon goddess.
Ooh.
Who came to the earth every Friday.
Okay, TGIF.
To bathe in a scented well.
Ooh.
And the prince knew that he couldn't be together. They couldn't be together because the moon goddess was not from this world. So he fell into deep despair. Then one day, while he was carving a rooster made from wood, he challenged it to take him to the moon. So the rooster, with beautiful, colorful feathers, came alive and flew the prince to the moon to be with his beloved. And since then, the prince was never seen again. This is the Sari Manok. So that's the legend of the Sari Manok.
Nice.
So I found that interesting because I think before we were trying to look for stories of the Sari Manok.
Yeah, when we were doing the dragon, yeah. Imagine Dragons.
That's right, Imagine Dragons.
Yes.
Or Minok, was that Minokawa?
Minokawa is part of the dragon lore, so yeah.
So at first, because obviously I didn't know enough of the epic and I wasn't so immersed in the details of history, I actually thought the Raja Suleiman
in Manila
was the same as the Raja Suleiman of the legends. Actually not.
He's a real person, no?
He's a real person.
Yeah.
And actually, I wish we learned a bit more about them in history. Because I know that whenever we learn about the Spanish colonial period, we learn of like maybe two key moments, which is the first kind of interaction, right? Which is the Magellan, Lapu-Lapu,
Legazpi.
Basically, the Cebu encounters.
Yes.
At least all I remember learning from Luzon was really about more of the late colonial period revolution, which is Gomburza and
Miguel Malvar,
La Solidaridad, and KKK, and basically like this obviously local revolutionaries, but also these European educated elite class, right? That kind of helped not spark the revolution, but
help strategize
because it was two parts, right? One is the on-ground revolution and then the other one is the formation of a republic, right?
Yes.
So to speak. What I did not learn, that we did not learn enough about is, you know, the last resistances in Manila, right? And that's who Suleiman is. He was the ruler, he was a crown prince of the Kingdom of Luzon, right? In the 16th century, and he was part of the last resistance before Luzon was completely overtaken. And he was basically known for that, like, kind of like the last stand. And it's kind of, it's really epic in a way, if you think about it. So it's said here that his name is Suleiman, Raja Suleiman, or Suleiman III. And he was a crown prince of the Kingdom of Luzon in the 16th century. He was a nephew of King Ake, or Aki, of Luzon, and he was the commander of the Luzonian forces in the Battle of Manila in 1570 against the Spanish forces. So their palace was actually within the walled and fortified city of Manila. And I don't know, is this Intramuros maybe, where they built Intramuros eventually?
Yeah.
So Suleiman, along with his uncle, King Aki, and Lakandula,
pinuno ng Tondo.
Yes, ruled the adjacent kingdom and principality of Tondo. They were the three rulers who dealt with the Spanish in the Battle of Manila. And the Spanish describe Raja Suleiman as one of the most aggressive rulers that they fought, because he was very young, right?
Yeah.
At this time, King Aki had been there for a while, Lakandula had been there for a while, but he was still very young and he continued to fight them. He had an adopted son who was baptized Agustin de Legazpi. He was baptized, you know, when he converted to Christianity, who was proclaimed the sovereign ruler of Tondo when Lakandula died. And he, along with most of Lakandula's sons and most of Suleiman's other adopted sons, were executed by the Spanish after being implicated in an assembly to overturn Spanish rule in Manila. And this execution helped the Kingdom of Spain to fortify its rule in the parts of Luzon. So obviously this was kind of like, and it, you know, it sparks the same feeling as the Bernardo Carpio story, where it's like your last rulers have been killed and overtaken, right?
Ooh, he's cool.
He's super cool. So Raja Suleiman was ruler of Manila along with Raja Matanda when the invasion of Legazpi occurred.
Yes.
At that time, Manila was already influenced by neighboring Southeast Asian kingdoms. And so they were already doing lots of trade with China, with Siam, which is Thailand today, and other places. So when Miguel Lopez de Legazpi was searching for a suitable place to establish his capital after moving from Cebu to Banay, because the Portuguese came and also tried to claim the archipelago. So they sent Martin de Goiti and Juan de Salcedo northwards, and that's how they ended up in Luzon, because they heard there's a very prosperous kingdom in Luzon.
Yes, yes.
So they landed in Cavite and they were sending like a message of friendship to the states around the Pasig River. And Suleiman, who'd be given authority over the settlements, Bayrah Matanda was willing to accept friendship, but
and trade.
He refused to cede his sovereignty. And so when he realized that they were not going to like respect his like wishes and boundaries, that's when he declared war. And that's where the battle for Manila started.
But how does that conversation go? Like, hey, we're these guys who took over the kingdoms in the south, and we're, you know, maybe you guys want to trade. And, you know, this guy, oh, you know, I'm used to trading with foreign bodies. I'm a worldly man. I have like Chinese silk and, you know, Indian herbs or whatnot. Of course I'll trade with you. And the Spanish goes like, yeah, but you have to report to us now. And I'm like, fuck no.
Exactly right. Like, show some respect. Now, there's another Suleiman. So, the funny thing is,
why aren't there more Catholic people named Solomon? There's so many Suleimans.
The funny thing is that people don't really, like, there are differing accounts of when Suleiman died.
Okay, that makes sense.
And some even say that he, so basically there are different dates, and in some of them, he lived on for long. Like, to a long age. The first misattribution is with the person called Tariq Sulaiman, who led...
Ispul, right? Tariq Ispul.
Who led the Makabebe, which is in Pampanga.
Yeah.
The Makabebe Revolt that was started in the Battle of Bangkosay. So, Tariq Sulaiman died. And because, you know, people... Probably at that time, the royal family fled Manila. So, no one knew where the royal family was.
Yeah.
So, they thought, oh, a Sulaiman died in that battle.
That's him.
So, was that Raja Sulaiman? But the thing is, he appeared again in 1574.
Love it.
To fight once again. So, the...
Tariq Sulaiman or Raja Sulaiman?
Raja Sulaiman. So, they thought Raja Sulaiman died. It turns out it was the... Maybe Kapampangan guy. Because it's Makabebe. Tariq Sulaiman. Who died. And then he led another revolt. So all this time pala, he was just like laying in hiding.
Yes.
And when Lopez de Legazpi died, so here's the thing. When Lopez de Legazpi died in 1572.
Lopez de Legazpi was the first Governor General.
Yes. Manila. He had the successor. So Governor General Guido de Lavesaris. And Lopez de Legazpi had certain agreements with Sulaiman and Lacandula, which is why like they agreed, okay, we won't revolt anymore and stuff like that, right? But the next governor general did not honor the agreements with Sulaiman and Lacandula. He sequestered the properties of both of the kings.
Greedy.
And basically, when he took over, the Spanish like atrocities run rampant at that time. So that's when Sulaiman and Lacandula led a revolt in the villages of Navotas.
Navotas?
Which in our minds is a mystical place.
Navotas? No, but Navotas has a lot of floods.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, this is called the Manila Revolt of 1574, but it's sometimes called Sulaiman Revolt or the Lacandula Revolt. And they had naval forces at that time as well. It's also known as the First Battle of Manila Bay. But they did not win, right? So, they had to agree to the peace treaties and an alliance was formed. So, some claim that Sulaiman died in 1574. But people still say, no, it's probably like a mistaken identity with that Makabebe guy. But there are certain genealogical documents that say that he actually lived past that revolt. Because he also fathered even more children.
Good.
Like, he had more progeny.
Are there kids surviving today?
Sulaiman is no longer mentioned in the haunted events that took place from 1586 to 1588, but involved many members of his family. So, who knows? It's one of those things where, like, it's like an Elvis, like, is he really dead? When did he die? And I suspect, like, if people were still allowed to talk about him or whatever, he would... I suspect he's one of those people who could have been even more of a living
legend. Yeah.
Because he's like, oh, where's the real king of Manila?
I know,
is he still hiding and whatnot, right?
It's like the...
You can do it.
The Jesus Cup. What is it called? You know what? The Holy Grail.
I watched The Dial of Destiny.
It's fine. I mean,
actually,
it's fine.
I didn't finish it. I just watched like the first.
There are too many acts in it, but it was fine. I mean, I had very low expectations, but it was fine. It was fun. It was fun. The de-aging tech is better, but it's still weird.
I felt like the first 30 minutes, I was just watching a video game.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's exactly what Brian was saying. Like, it's just like a video game. Because, it flows like a video game.
Because he's like, yung eyes are so dead.
Yeah, it's the uncanny valley of the eyes. Yeah. They can't get that right yet. But anyways, it's like the Jesus cup. It's like the
Holy Grail
where they said, where in the angels and demons, where it's the bloodline of Jesus, right? And if there is a way for us to find the bloodline of the King of Tondo, but at the same time, again,
was it angels and demons, or was it the Da Vinci Code?
Da Vinci Code. Mm. Yes, the Merovingian kings. But see, I can remember Merovingian kings,
but not
I can't remember what Jesus cup. Where the Jesus cup is. So, but for me, it's like that Bernardo Carpio thing too, right? It's about, a demoralizing tool for the people invading. But it's also sort of like, okay, no, we won't fight. We're just going to wait for this king to come. It's kind of like the messianic myth. It's kind of like this whole thing of, it takes away agency from the people to revolt on their own. But I guess that's the human nature of revolt, right? Like, you need to be rallied around a central figure and need
and
to
I
be
mean,
ordered around.
That's the whole purpose of propaganda, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if this was ever settled, but I remember when we were being taught the whole piece on, did the Americans actively encourage having Jose Rizal as the national hero instead of Andres Bonifacio, to encourage a specific kind of, oh, you know, you don't use your sword, you'd rather use your pen,
philosophy,
stuff like that.
Yeah. And Jose Rizal was pro statehood of the Philippines under Spain or under America, like as a protectorate.
Yeah, in a sense, he was a bit more moderate, wasn't he?
Yeah, quite moderate.
It's probably one of those things where they were like, oh, we can't let stories of Sulaiman like survive, because I was just surprised for such a person who had such a, I mean, it's pretty epic, his real life, what he done and stuff like that. His legend probably lived in the stories of people who were closest to him, but if he was a ruler of Manila, we don't learn about.
No, I learned about him
of Manila, of Tondo.
Because I worked in Malate, one of my earlier jobs, and we were one square away from the Raja Sulaiman Square.
Mm.
And there were always events there and everything. And then I said, what is this Raja? I like, it's such a vague thing. And I looked him up and I said, like, wait a second. We learn about La Candula. We learn about, you know.
Do you think it's because,
I have a theory,
Tagalogs kind of, because it's a, the it, what's this, the kingdom was largely influenced by the Bornean kingdoms, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it is because of the attitudes of Tagalogs versus Muslims?
That's possible.
Or not Tagalogs, but non-Muslims versus like Muslims. And so they kind of like don't feel like it's really part of their history or their
identity. I think that's, there's part of that, but I think also there's part of it, like the whole propaganda during the Marcos era was us civilized people going versus the other, and the other could be communist forces, it could be fundamentalist Islam forces in the south. And when you look at the narratives of like the people who speak for them, for these groups, they're all very rational people and they have good points, right? But of course, the propaganda was to make them out into these horrible, villainous people and to separate them from us. And so the whole spirit of revolt and the whole spirit of revolution, I think, was purposefully taken away from our history books and our history narratives, again, from martial law, because they didn't want to revolt. Like, the only imagery that perpetuated were us, it's kind of like Nazi Germany, right? Where they perpetuated this narrative of them being like a superior race. And for us, it was about Maharlika. We are a noble class. We were, you know, they took part of a pre-colonial story, but only the positive part, only the rich part and the cultural part. And
actually, even during the, I remember I was looking at the version of Andra Patra and Sulaiman's story in Mabel Cook's Filipino popular taste. And Mabel Cook is an American scholar, right? Mm-hmm. The way she talks about the Islam or Mindanao community, she said, oh, the Moros and whatever.
Yeah.
She talks about them as if they're pirates.
Yeah.
So she said, oh, like they're pirates, they pillage and they raid the seas, etc. Yeah. But if you look at the accounts of the Maguindanao people, it's actually their kingdom.
Yeah. They live there.
Yeah.
Yeah. We live there. The Spanish were the one pillaging.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, even the word Moro is very, even the Moors in the way it's used in Europe. Right? Moorish.
Yeah.
It's very othering and it's very derogatory. Like, oh, the Moors are savages. The Moors are pagan because they have multiple wives and they, you know, and they're dark skinned and they worship the moon, you know, all those things. But really, they're just as old a civilization as the Western civilization. And so it's a very, I mean, the Crusades were all about against the Moors. So that whole narrative has been perpetuated for a long time and even till today. So, you know,
that's true.
But it's part of it's an older part of Filipino history than it is than Catholicism ever was.
Yeah, so I'm excited to cover more stories. So the rabbit hole I was starting to go
was the Raja Soliman,
was the Sultan Kudarat and all of those
I really wanted to, we haven't even started on the Kingdom of Tonto and the Majapahit Kingdom and everything.
But yeah, that was I was starting to, and then I was like, wait, I don't need to tell this story to Anna.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with it.
I love all the kingdoms. I love all of the older kingdoms. And like, I love how they were structured and how they're part of things today. Every time I do research, I'm like, what still survives, right? Yeah. Who still survives? What still survives today?
Yeah.
And I love that the whole recent history of it. I also went down a rabbit hole of Lapu-Lapu the other week. So I'm sort of also like super excited to do that as well. Lapu-Lapu, a hero so great that we named the fish after him. Lapu-Lapu.
Why did we name the fish?
Because it's a great fish. It's a grouper. It's one of the biggest fishes you can get.
Okay.
And maybe it lived in that bay where they had the battle. I don't know.
There was something.
But I was telling one time we were eating and I said, I think my parents were telling this story. Whenever they travel and they were like, oh, we have this fish. What kind of fish? And they say, oh, it's St. Peter's fish. It's a sewer fish. They grow it in the sewers. But it's like it's a sacred fish because it's the fish from the loaves and the fishes story, right? And my parents were like, oh, wow, let's do that. Let's try that. And then when they served it, it was a tilapia. And then another time, I think we were in the U.S. and I think we were in the South and they were going to serve a fish.
Mm-hmm.
And then they said, oh, you know, this is a very large fish. It's a game fish. It's called grouper, right? And they're like, okay, we'll try grouper. That sounds like a wholesome fish, right? A grouper.
Okay.
And then they served it and my dad's like, it's lapu-lapu. It's, you know, a lapu-lapu fish. Fish named after a hero.
And I even was going down this whole... Anyway, so the point about Sultan Kudarat, right? This is one of like the most like famous heroic figures.
Yes.
Of history of that people, and you know he put up great resistance against the Spanish, and he would help neighboring kingdoms. So in fact, there was a time when the Spanish were like invading Maguindanao, and they were like they felt like they couldn't fight back. Mm-hmm. And he gave this like rousing speech with like, are you willing to like blah 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 blah,
like Braveheart?
Because they were like, look, it's gonna cost too much. Like we don't know if we can fight, and you know we're gonna lose a year's harvest if we don't have enough men, whatever. Yeah, yeah. He gave this like inspiring rousing speech like Braveheart. He's like, I think 1 year's worth of harvest is worth like your lives and our freedom and blah blah blah. The only territory that they ceded was Palawan.
Oh, also because it's hard.
Yeah, they were like, oh, that's, you know, logistically speaking, that's hard to defend.
It's really hard, yeah.
But anyway, that was the epic of Indira Patra and Sulaiman.
I love it.
And related historical tangent.
Yes, yes. And the other Raja Sulaiman, the real life other one.
Raja Sulaiman.
Love it.
We always love covering the epics.
Mm-hmm.
I just realized now, based on what you're saying, that this is really one of those things where... If you don't have the actual text, because remember we had some of the actual text in the Humamadap noon. Yeah, and there was just like so much more color
and
context to what was happening.
Even the form of the story informed the atmosphere of the time.
And I really truly tried to trace like, is there original some text. More like, detailed text or description? I'm sure it would be. And I think it exists somewhere, but it's just not something that I have access to at this point. But there was like an interesting version. I caught a snippet where instead of the four
monsters,
there were just two dragons.
Okay.
And this is where it was shown that Indrapatra was wiser than Sulaiman.
Oh.
So Sulaiman went and fought the first dragon. And the dragon said, whatever you do, please don't cut through me. Because you would defeat me that way. And he was like, really? Then maybe was I should. Was it a trick? And then he did. You. So he cut through the dragon and the dragon
split in two.
They kept doing that. And eventually Sulaiman got defeated. And so when Indrapatra came, and he heard the dragon say
don't
that, he was like,
you're
trying to trick me. So all he did was, he did 1,000, like, death by 1,000 cuts.
Yeah.
Like, he did just cut him, like, small cuts and stabs in different places in his body. And eventually, the dragon bled out and got tired.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how he died.
That's smart, but also sounds like a Greek story.
Yeah, and so when I went down that rabbit hole, there was a scholar who found that there were anywhere from 770 to 1,100 versions of the two brothers defeating the dragons all over the world.
Some
of them are in Southeast Asia, Cambodia, Laos, etc., but there are also versions in
Europe,
Ireland, Scotland, etc. Yeah. And this text motif of like two brothers fighting together and defeating dragons.
There's this, it reminds me of this story of the Maui brothers.
Mm.
Like Maui as in Moana, they were actually brothers.
Mm-hmm.
And they have all sorts of stories all around the world in the Pacific Islander nations. One of the stories was when they created Tonga, the kingdom of Tonga.
Mm.
First, they came up with one mountain. They pulled it out of the sea. They pulled a mountain out of the sea. But it was so mountainous that people kept falling off and dying. So when they pulled the second island, which is now the occupied Tonga, they stomped on it.
Oh, cute!
They stomped on it so that it would be flat and the people would live there.
Oh.
But both islands used to be occupied. And a few hundred years ago, they evacuated the mountainous one because it was an active volcano. But there were still domesticated chickens there. Mm. There were still, So that's like
nice.
Brother stories, right?
Brother stories.
Teamwork stories, but also stupid and smart brother stories. So that's the moral of the story. This is why we only have the one kid. Because I don't want to have like, this one is pretty good. So I don't want to jinx it.
So funny.
Okay.
So, we hope you enjoyed the tale of Indrapatra and Sulaiman. Let us know do you know any other stories involving these characters?
Are you from Maguindanao?
Have you heard any additional context that would be helpful to the story?
Are you a descendant? Are you a descendant of
Sultan
Kudarat?
Or Raja Sulaiman?
Yes. Are you from the tribe? Lanao tribe? No.
Maranao
tribe? No, the people who descended from the twins.
The Maranao. Tama ba? Maguindanao.
Yeah, I think Maranao. Ranao?
Yeah, Maranao.
Are you part of that tribe? Do you descend from bird killers? Bird killers? I wonder if there's so many stories of, when I say so many stories, I've heard of three. But so many stories of the giant bird that blots out the sky.
Yeah.
I like that one. They're also like, if this giant bird blots out the sky, you have to hide all your small animals because the bird will eat the animals. But that could be like a storm warning, right?
Have you read the book Black Sun?
Have I read the book?
So it's the vampire one? Good. No. Okay. So just like one last book recommendation as we close. There's this book. It's based on Native American mythology.
Mm-hmm.
So I think old. I don't know if it's Aztec or Mayan or whatever, or probably even older, but very old Native American mythology. It's called Black Sun. and it kind of details, like, it's like an epic story and it features different characters, but it follows like this guy Serapio, mm-hmm. who is supposedly the avatar of the crow god.
Ooh.
And he kind of travels and he wants to like take over mm-hmm. the kingdom during the eclipse.
Oh,
it's really good.
Very cool.
Rebecca Roanhorse.
Okay.
Black Sun. I'm sorry if I did not do the synopsis justice. I have to read it.
I want to read it. I will. Okay.
All right. That's it for today. We hope you guys enjoyed that. And let us know if you have other suggestions for topics that we can cover.
Other epics. Yeah. Other stories. Other historical figures.
Yeah.
Ooh.
I can't wait to do an episode on the kingdoms.
Yes.
Anyway, Anima.
Yes.
Where can they find us?
And they can find us at thegodsmustbecrazy.pod on Instagram, Facebook, and Patreon. And they can listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Podcasts. And thank you to everyone who listened through us through the year. This year, I think we got so many new listeners. Mm-hmm. And so welcome to the pod. We had not realized that we have been doing this for so long. But
2 years now? Two and a half?
Two and a half. Because yeah. We started like at a July-ish.
2021.
So, yeah. And we've passed. Is this our 50th episode?
Yeah!
This is our 50th yes. episode. Oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh. Milestone. Oh, Thank you for listening to our hour-long ramblings.
Oh my gosh.
And multiple asides.
Thank you for learning with us.
Yeah. We're glad you were still able to learn things in between all of the nonsense. And we love you guys.
So we love you.
Continue to send us your feedback, your suggestions. We love hearing from you guys. Feel free to send us a message.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it would really help if you have not done it yet to give us a 5-star rating on Instagram. That's always helpful. Or to mm-hmm. share it with your friends. Do you have any friends who are interested in the Mindanao epics and myths? Do you have any friends who are interested in history who probably don't know about this? Do you have any friends who are possibly descended from the royal families of Mindanao or Luzon? Feel free to share with your friends and we will see you next time.
Bye.
Bye, guys.